Blog Talk Radio.
Take back control.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rifleman Radio Show. The Rifleman Radio Show is dedicated to bringing you the absolutely best information possible on rifle marksmanship, rifle safety, and the things that you can do to help safeguard the freedoms and liberties that living in this nation, the greatest nation on the face of the earth, affords you. Well, I'm glad everybody's listening tonight. I hope that I can get the chat to open up for me so I can see what folks are saying on there. Can I be short the call screener tonight, my co-host? He's stuck out in the desert out in Las Cruces, New Mexico. He'll be sorely missed. But that gives folks a chance to, if you want to call in, if you're a white person that wants to call in and mentioned something about trying to shoot at a black person, or a black person that wants to call in and talk about the evils white folks, then I'm completely wide open. There will be nothing between you and me. You're guaranteed to get on. We've got Chuck Undersea, the director of the movie Behold a Pale Horse, will be our guest tonight. He'll be on in just a little while, and the movie is really a pretty fantastic movie. And let me say, too, that the Appleseed Project is not endorsing the movie or any of the opinions expressed by any of the folks interviewed in the movie. But Appleseed is a part of the movie, not because we're there to validate anything anybody else is saying, but because we're there to get our message out, all right? We're there to get out the message of Appleseed. And so it's not going to hurt you to have an open mind and take a look at this movie. And I just closed the window that had the movie trailer on it, but I'll get that in a minute. We'll announce that in just a minute here. And there we go. I got the chat room to open. So if you guys have any questions, you can put in the chat, and I'll try to keep an eye on the chat and watch that. And I'll keep an eye on the switchboard too. Now, if you're on the switchboard, then there's no way I'm going to be able to screen the calls or have the call screener check them. So if I open up your mic, you don't have to hang up or anything, but I'll just ask you if you've got anything you want to say. And if you don't want to say anything, you don't have to say anything. Or if you're just going to say, I'm just listening, that's fine too. And I guarantee you that you'll receive no injuries from speaking over the radio. So if you want to call in, our number is 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. And we'll begin the show just like we always do. We've got a few minutes here where this is the time that we get folks to call in, to give thanks to their local crew guys, and mention it in the air, give them a pat on the back. Congratulations. Somebody just passed their PC. If somebody just shot to rifleman standards. Somebody's been doing a great job in helping to run events, anything like that around there. Then call in and let the rest of us know what a great person that you have working on your local crew, because they're all great folks. And nobody's getting paid to do this. The folks are doing it out of the kindness of their heart, out of their sense of responsibility to their fellow man and to their nation. But nonetheless, nobody doesn't like a pat on the back. So be sure and let the folks who are working hard, let the folks know that you've noticed it, and give them a shout-out over the air. If you'd like to talk about or give an AAR for an event that you just ran, or for just an update on your area. And we'd like to have that too. All right. We always like hearing about how the program is going in the different states. All right. So once again, the number is 347-308-8790. Okay, let me try that again. 347-308-8790. There we go. The only reason you didn't hear me slow down is because I was typing while I was doing it. The only reason you didn't hear me slow down is because I was typing what I was saying. Otherwise, I would have gone into that kind of zombie mode. All right? 347-308-8790. There's 50 lines waiting for you to call in, all right? And I'll tell you, too, that the when I talk about the local guys, the local producer in Texas stuff, when I mention them on the air, never fail. They always say thanks, and they always say they really appreciated that. That's the same thing that your guys are going to say to you. They're going to say thanks. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for mentioning me on the air. Thank you for recognizing that I'm doing that I'm working hard for you guys, okay? Okay, so Unbridled Liberty and let's see, Ed Healer, any of the rest of you guys in the chat room, Spitz Dickler, Deer Crow, any of you guys in there listening, you know, grab your phone and call in so that you can tell your local crew members, thank you. I'm going to tell Kirk Wheeler, Spitz Dickler, I'm going to tell him, tell you guys how much I appreciate him. Kirk does the graphics and a lot of the design work for Appleseed. If you see the trifold, that is Kirk's baby. He did a great job on that. Every time I look at it, it's like I love it. It's like a piece of beautiful artwork to me. All the billboards are up around the nation. All right, Kirk designed those too, and I think that they're absolutely beautiful. He does a great job, and he also helps us out at Battle Road. That's the shooting company that my buddy Mark Martinez, who's also an Alpha Seed instructor, and he and I started together. And you can find out more about that at battleroadusa.com. All right? And Kirk has been helping us out with that, too. He's working on graphics and video and stuff like that. And I'm going to talk to him later tonight or tomorrow about turning some photographs into some silhouettes to redo the main page on our webpage. I know he's listening right now, so that's why I'm saying that. And I want to thank Doug Tibbetts. Now, Doug is sick right now. Doug Tibbetts is a veteran. He's been with the Appleseed program since the very beginning. He was at the first boot camp at Rancher. And for many years, every time I opened the gate here at the Davila location, Doug Tibbetts was the first one to come wheeling through there. And he helped set up, he did all the admin stuff. He would help with all the setup and stuff like that. He didn't do a lot of stuff on the line because he was very sick, and he still is. Doug is a Vietnam veteran, and he is a Marine. And praise the Lord, he managed to stay out of the path of almost every bullet and fragment in Vietnam. I say almost because he didn't make it 100%. And nonetheless, that war is still reaching its claws out 40 years later and digging into him. And it's determined it's going to kill him. And it's going to. It's going to kill him. As sure as the sun is going to set tonight and rise tomorrow, that war is going to kill Doug. And that's sad news because he's a good man. And I want to thank Doug because he was always there. He's always ready to help out. always ready to do anything he could to help with the program. He went and made copies of stuff and paid his own way on making flyers and copies and things like that. And I probably have 40 or 50 photographs of him because of him sleeping on the firing line because he would get everything going for us, and he'd bring a chair down to the firing line and put in his hearing protection and he would drift off to sleep. And I've got a picture of him asleep at every apple seed because of the treatment he was going through and the medication they were giving to him. It really wore him out. But he was there to help. He was there to help all the time. And I can't thank him enough. And I love him. I love him like a brother. So, Doug, thank you, my brother. And I'll talk to you and I'll see you soon. All right? All right. Once again, the number is 347-308-8790. Now, I've got several callers here. I'm going to go ahead and start putting you on. Like I said, don't freak out. If I open up your mic and tell you to come on, if you don't want to talk, just don't say anything. I'll close the mic. I'm not going to hang up on you. You can stay on the line. But all right. Area code 770. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Chris from Northeast Georgia. How are you?
I'm just dandy. What did you say your name was?
My name is Chris.
Chris? Okay. Are you with the Appleseed Project?
I am not. I heard about your radio blog because of one of the Appleseed. I guess they would be a volunteer, and I'm looking forward to attending my first Appleseed in Toccoa, Georgia, here September 1st and 2nd.
No kidding. Well, congratulations. You know, I always love the Toccoa site just because of the connection to Band of Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's one of the sites or one of their jump sites and stuff there.
Wow.
Well, welcome to the show, Chris. What do you got? You got a question or a comment or what do you got?
No, I really wanted to thank the Revolutionary War Veterans Administration and all the Appleseed volunteers for what they're doing. As a longtime shooter, I would like to think of myself as a marksman. Maybe September 1st and 2nd we'll find out otherwise. As I'm sitting here at my reloading bench getting ready for all that. But I have never done a formal shooting event since I got out of small bore indoor competition at age 16. So I'm in my early to mid-30s now and just really looking forward to it. I enjoy shooting all manner of firearms and just really enjoy the volunteer spirit that seems to be prevalent with the Appleseed Project and the very concept of our country being founded on riflemen and an independent spirit. And obviously in light of the Supreme Court decision and other things going on in America, we won't spoil the mood too heavily with politics here, but we're certainly in need of an independent spirit. And that seems to permeate the Appleseed events. Though I've not attended, my knowledge is based on reading on the internet, a few emails that I have observed from another friend who's communicated with volunteers and just scouring the internet for YouTube and related videos. It just seems like something that I want to be a part of, not only to test my skills, but hopefully.
Oh, yeah, you're gonna absolutely enjoy yourself, Chris, because the Appleseed Project is, you can read about it, and I can tell you all about it, but you know what I've found out is that it's kind of like that first bite of, you know, when you get a loaf of bread out of the oven, just finished baking, and you bring it up, and you're sitting there looking at it, waiting for it to cool down just enough so you can tear a chunk off. And you tear a chunk off, and you bite into that fresh baked bread, and man, it is absolutely delicious. And I can tell you about it all day, but you're never going to understand what I'm talking about until you take a bite yourself. And that's kind of the way it is with Appleseed. And the Appleseed Project, the events, they really are absolutely a fun time. It's a very casual thing. It's not a competition. You're not competing against anybody other than yourself. And it's all done by folks, by good-hearted folks, who are all volunteers. Nobody's getting paid to do this. Everybody's doing it because they genuinely love having the chance to share the knowledge that they've gained with the other folks there. And
well,
all the folks that attend Appleseeds are absolutely, I got to tell you, they're the best folks in the nation. People that show up to these events are the best folks in the nation. And we don't do any screening or anything. It just so happens that they are. And you don't have to do anything special before you come to an Appleseed Rifle Marksmanship event. You don't have to do any preparation or anything like that. I get folks all the time telling me, I really want to go, but I need to practice some before I go and do this, or I need to sight in my rifle. And there's really nothing that you need to do. Everything that you're going to need is we're going to tell you, and it's going to happen there. You're going to sight in your rifle there. We're going to teach you all the stuff that that we'd like you to know. And it is fast-paced because we got a ton of stuff that we're trying to get to you, but we don't leave anybody behind. All right,
just out of curiosity, I didn't mean to interrupt. There seems to be a phone delay here, so finish if you need to.
Oh, go ahead.
It seems that they suggest the 22 rimfire for obvious reasons, cost being a major part of it, and obviously virtually no recoil whatsoever, certainly being attractive. Is there a benefit to shooting an entire two-day Appleseed only with the rimfire? Can I still qualify as rifleman? Would it be beneficial
Absolutely.
For me to bring my centerfire for day two?
The Appleseed Project was never really intended for rimfire. The Appleseed Project
right.
was a centerfire rifle program. And we eventually altered it and started running the rimfires because of the tremendous increase in ammunition. Ammunition began its rise, and it outperformed all of the precious metals and everything else on its rise, and the cost became so prohibitive, we said, to get folks to shoot, we're going to have to do something. And allowing the rimfire in was not that big of a jump, because all of these skills, all the techniques that you're going to learn when you're shooting rimfire at 25 meters are all going to translate directly to your centerfire rifle. Now, it's not always a reverse case that isn't always true. Just because if you're a good centerfire rifle shooter, that doesn't make you a good small bore shooter. You could be, but it doesn't make you one. But if you can master the skills and techniques with the rimfire, then you can do it with the centerfire. So the first benefit is the cost. Instead
right.
of, because we shoot a great deal at an event, we'll shoot 500-plus rounds. So instead of having it to cost you between $300 and $600 for the ammunition, we've burned it down where you can shoot it for $20-$25 bucks. And and it also allows you to a lot of folks who may not be ready to run 500 rounds through a centerfire rifle to begin learning the skills and techniques there on the line. I just had a 7-year-old girl that just blew me away at the last event here in Davila, because she hung on to that rifle for 600 rounds. She didn't miss anything. She didn't stop. She was always there ready, always had her mags ready, everything. And there's no way she could have done that with a centerfire rifle. There's no way. And a lot of women, and I'm not going to say anything about women not being able to fire centerfire rifles, because they can. I'm just saying a lot of women, by virtue of being women, have smaller frames, and the centerfire rifles are a bit rough on them. So that's why we're doing the rimfire. And that being said, I'll still tell you this, that also nothing beats attending an Appleseed. You know, you can attend an Appleseed and shoot your rimfire rifle, but nothing is going to beat attending an Appleseed and shooting through the whole thing with your centerfire either. Because most folks don't, they don't go to the range and say, okay, I'm going to burn up 500 rounds today, or you know, today and tomorrow. I'm going to burn up 500 rounds. They just don't do it. They'll shoot 20 rounds, and they'll shoot 500. And there's a big difference in you getting your rifle and shooting 20 rounds and you and getting your rifle and shooting 500 rounds. There's a complete world of difference in that.
Well, I went to the boot camp. Now, how about the ranges that they practice at? Presumably, and I'm going to get the exact number off, but somewhere in that 24, 25-meter range is what I read on the Appleseed website, if I recall correctly, for the rimfire. Do they do 25 meters for centerfire, or do they start the centerfire shooters out at a different range?
No, all of the instruction is done at 25 meters for everybody. The reason we do that is because we have all the targets scaled down, and we want to be able to get the feedback as rapidly as possible. And so if we were shooting 100, 200, 300, 400, it takes a long time to go down there, check your target for holes, and get the data, and come back. You can do the same thing at 25 meters, 82 feet with your centerfire rifle, and you zero your rifle 25 meters, and that you'll have your battle sight zero, which would be anywhere from 250 to 300 depending on the rifle that you're shooting. So bringing your rimfire, shooting through the course with your rimfire is great. And then if you want to come to another event and shoot with your centerfire, you can, or you can shoot your rimfire on Saturday and then bring your centerfire to the line on Sunday and then shoot Sunday with your centerfire. Any number of ways.
Do you think that it would be best to start and end with a centerfire, or for a guy who's got a reasonable amount of experience with a centerfire rifle, do you think it would be detrimental to the learning to plan on breaking it up just from a cost standpoint?
There's no detriment in any of the breakups or anything else. The only thing that's going to want to make this decision for you is how much ammo are you ready to spend? And that if you've got a big stack of ammunition, then I would shoot at centerfire. I grab my centerfire rifle and say, I'm going to shoot this centerfire. I'm going to burn it up centerfire.
My only iron-sighted centerfire is either a Mosin Nagant, which I don't want to say is laughable because I engaged a target roughly the size of a gallon jug offhand at 175 yards the other day, and though I connected on my third shot, my first and second were nearly scraping this gallon jug-sized target. So it's just that the Mosin leaves a lot to be desired when it comes to the action of the bolt. We won't say
That's going to be the only thing is breaking your position every time, working the bolt. If that's what you got for your centerfire, then dig your rimfire. If it's a magazine-fed rimfire, and learn the skills and techniques on that. And then
I've got a beautiful Enfield. The issue is I only have about 200 pieces of brass. And as a reloader, my options are to bring my reloading equipment, at least scale it down specifically to load 303 Brit.
Don't do any of that. Just bring your rimfire. Bring your rimfire and shoot it with the rimfire, and then come to another one after that. And
I've got an AR, but that whole poodle shooter 223 thing just doesn't seem to be the spirit of a real man centerfire round.
All right, now you're talking about the rifle that the American soldier has kept all enemies foreign and domestic at bay. Bring your rimfire and shoot it, learn skills and techniques on that, and then bring your centerfire to the next one. All right?
Excellent.
Listen, Chris, thanks for calling in, and don't be a stranger. Be sure and call in after you attend the event in Florida and let me know how it went, okay?
Excellent.
I'm going to hang up.
Have a great day.
I'm going to put you back on hold.
Excellent.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Bye.
All right, we got Got another caller. I'm going to take real quick. I'm going to take a couple of callers real quick, and then we're going to bring on Chuck Untersee. All right, Larry Code 217, you on there?
Yes, sir. Scout Glenn Comstock,
hey,
Brother Com here.
Well, hey, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm doing real good.
The last time I was on the show,
I was talking to you about my at that time, 13-year-old son who both my daughters had qualified for riflemen, a 17-year-old daughter and a 23-year-old daughter at that time. And remember I was sharing how he was frustrated and didn't want to come to Appleseed anymore with me?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we persisted, and I pushed him to get him there, but I didn't push him. We left him on the line with the other guys, just kind of separated him, left him with the other men. And he just qualified about a month and a half ago. One of the first shoots this year he qualified. So I have three riflemen and myself in the house. So.
Well, what's his name?
Proud.
You don't have to tell me his whole name.
He's not on the forum right now. His name is Joshua. My daughter, Jennifer, she just took an orange hat. If you look at Bloomington, Illinois, after action report,
okay.
He didn't take a hat. He's not quite ready for that. But Jennifer, if you look up Bloomington, Illinois, the guy who runs GunSaveLives.com took a ton of pictures at that shoot. And my daughter, Jennifer, she was doing all the we actually had to break up the line. There were so many shooters that day. But Jennifer was helping over on one side, and I was instructing on the other side. But you'll see her in her little orange hat there doing all the demo positions. But we're
well,
a bunch of riflemen over here.
To Jennifer, and congratulations to Josh.
Yeah.
Because he not only did he shoot the rifleman standard, but he has done the most important job that a rifleman does, and that's persist. A rifleman persists. At the end of the day, that's what it boils down to. A rifleman always persists. He never gives up. He never quits. Whatever task is before him, he continues until he completes the task. He persists.
Yep. That's
well,
right.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
I got a word
much.
I wanted to thank some people. Wurstmacher is the first shoot boss we ever had. Last year was our first Appleseed, early April. And he's been the standard for me to go to any Appleseed shoot. He's just a great guy. He's just a kind of laid-back instructor, has all the facts right, really good teacher, teaches it all by the book, and he's just really good. So I wanted to thank Wurstmacher and all the other guys in Central Illinois that we work with here. And just wanted to thank also our veterans who might be listening, men and women who served in our armed forces. We appreciate you more than you could ever imagine. You guys are absolute true heroes of America.
Well, thank you very, very much, sir. And thank your daughters for me. Thank your son for me. And keep going. Keep sticking with it and keep persisting. God bless you and yours. And I'm not going to hang up. I'll just put you back on hold, and you can either listen
or whatever
you want to do. And be sure and keep calling in and giving us updates, okay?
You got it.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. I've got two more callers I want to run through real quick, and then we're going to bring on our guest. Area code 760-500. You're on the air. Okay. I think he was just listening. I'm pretty sure I recognize that number, but I didn't want to leave him hanging there. Area code 512-484. You're on the air. Okay, you just listen, 512-484. All right, then without further ado, I want to bring on our guests tonight. We've got Chuck Untersee, the director for Behold a Pale Horse, and his lovely assistant, Anita, who is the I believe she's a producer and one of the ramrods and a jack of all trades there. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scout. Thanks for having us. We appreciate it and are eager to tell people about the project.
And Anita, welcome to the show too.
Hi, Michael. It's good to hear from you.
Okay. Did I get all your titles right?
Yeah,
sounds good to me.
Yeah. Anita's jack of all trades for 32 years of marriage. So.
Well, I know how tough she is. So I don't want to upset her. Well, listen,
I have to apologize. We live in a very remote area, and we're off the grid, and we have to come to town for if we're ever on a show because of reception. So hopefully it doesn't drop out. We decided to sort of walk the walk 3 or 4 years ago, and where we live, we have kerosene light and a wood stove and a windmill, and it's been kind of basic training for what seems like might be on the horizon for us.
Well, I haven't been to your home yet, but I've seen pictures of it, and it looks kind of like one of those kits that you guys might have bought from the Unabomber.
it's a little better
kidding.
Than that.
I'm just kidding. It's actually a beautiful home. It's about as beautiful and quaint as it can be. And I never would have guessed that you guys were completely off the grid by looking at the home until you told me. I mean, it looks, it's a beautiful home.
Yeah,
and
well,
it surprised me that it was in Texas. It almost looks like a Pennsylvania-style barn house or something.
Well, what we did was we copied, we built the house off the rock off the property, and we copied a lot of the local German mid-19th century farmhouses, and it's what's called Fachwerk, which is, you know, partial timber and rock fill. But I moved back to Texas, because I was working on a feature film project, which I wrote, Rebel Private, which was about the Texas Brigade during the Civil War. And so I had gotten so into that whole world, it wasn't a big transition to go to kerosene.
Go ahead, Anita.
He forgets to mention we have a solar system, which is a wonderful system, especially when you have, like we do in Texas, 300 days of sun a year. So we gather up quite a bit of energy from that solar panels, which we don't have enough of, but the ones we have, they go into a battery system, and then we are actually able to have, some lights and a few things we plug in our computers and our phones and that kind of thing. And but we conserve our energy.
It was kerosene only, and in the last 6 months we've kind of upgraded a little bit.
Yeah, I got to get one of those kerosene adapters for my computer. Let me give you guys a little bit of information about Chuck and Anita. Chuck Entrecy and Anita have been working together for, I believe when I spoke to you earlier, it's about, I guess about 30 plus years now in the film industry, right? And,
right.
And go ahead.
We started in, we were doing still advertising photography in Texas and made the transition to film, and then moved to L.A., and we're out there for 22 years till 04.
Right. Well, how long has it been? It's been about a year and a half now that Chuck and Anita asked us to come to Fredericksburg and put on an Appleseed shoot to be filmed, and they've become part of this, part of the project, part of the movie. Has it been longer than that? It might have been longer than that.
The project itself has been, to back up, in about the time Obama became president, we had gotten funded the Civil War film, Rebel Private, and it would have been a really nice, wonderful project after 2 or 3 years in development and a bunch of money of our own. And when he became president, the investors decided that it was just a little too nerve-wracking of what they saw on the horizon, so they decided to put it on hold. And I was pretty upset because we had spent most of all that we had getting to that point. And of course, anything in the film business is risky, but it was rolling, and then that happened.
And you had
we jumped right into Pale Horse because, in a sense, to sort of fight back, because for some time, and certainly we've learned a lot since we started it. This project's been 3 years in the making. It's a trilogy, three-part series. But the bottom line is we had run around with phone book size documentation and articles and the thing we'd gotten off the internet about the various issues of the New World Order. And as you know, when you try to explain it to people that have no awareness, they kind of roll their eyes back and gloss over or glaze over. And so it was just the right time, the right place to jump into that, because we felt sort of like when you have kids and you try and convince them, you know, black is white or vice versa, they won't listen to you. Someone else tells them, they may listen. So we thought if we came up with a primer that might be something that you could hand off to someone and they would perhaps receive it better. And of course, in this climate we're in, geopolitical climate we're in, people generally are aware that we don't live in Kansas anymore. So that makes it a little easier for us. And so we just wanted to make this tool that people could use to from a grassroots level to wake people up, because, as you know, during the American Revolution, there was actually a very small percentage of the people that drove it. And if you applied that same percentage of, you hear all kinds of figures, 8%, 10%, whatever it was, if you applied that same amount of number of people to the population we have now, that's a whole lot of people that could stand up and, you know, be counted. And so that was our hope. And we've just rolled it out, and it's looking good, but it's a process. And like you were saying a minute ago, the rifleman persists. If you want to make three feature film length projects, it takes an inordinate amount of time and money, especially for two people. So we're busy all the time.
Well, let's talk about this for a minute. You got the for you folks who are listening, we've got the website. If you want to take a look at the website while we're talking, give the website out there, Chuck.
It's beholdapalehorse.tv.
Okay, beholdapalehorse.tv. beholdapalehorse.tv. That's the homepage.
And, of course, the reference is Revelation and the four horsemen. And this is the gospel truth. When I first started the project, I really had only vaguely heard of William Cooper, who, of course, wrote a book, Behold the Pale Horse, based on New World Order issues 10 years before. And I was purely and innocently at the time basing it on the book of Revelation, which I later found, of course, he did that book, but it's really irrelevant because it's, you know, the Bible is what you'd call public domain, but it is a reference to that, and it has biblical perspective, although for those who don't care, it is just purely historical fact, the issues that are involved and what's going on today in our country and the world.
Right, and so what you did is you got you have pulled together a group of, let's see, I don't know how many altogether. It looks like
it's about 38.
Yeah, 38 different people that you have interviewed, and these folks have given their opinions on everything. We've got, who are some of the folks? We've got Lieutenant General Boykin, Sheriff Richard Mack, Joyce Riley.
We've got Catherine Albrecht. We tried to pick people whose expertise was well known, at least in the Patriot community, for a particular thing, like Gerard Griffin in the Federal Reserve, or Catherine Albrecht and RFID issues, General Boykin, who I can tell you, I'm retired military, and I can tell you that to have a lieutenant general come out on position in the position he has openly in the public is not usual. And we were so thrilled that he agreed to do this for us. And
General Boykin is pretty much of a he's pretty much of a living legend. He was with the first Delta team, right? And
yeah, he was one of the founding members of Delta Force. He commanded later all of Special Forces. He was in charge of capturing Noriega. He was in Grenada. He Pablo Escobar and a special operations group went down and dealt with him. He was in the Iran affair in the desert trying to rescue the hostages. He was the commander in Mogadishu in what became the movie Black Hawk Down. He later got involved in his last retirement years at the Pentagon, CIA, and various other things. But he will tell you flat out in the film he's not Republican, he's not Democrat, he's a Christian, and we are becoming a socialist country, and as part of a global agenda, which we're seeing unfold before our eyes. We also filmed, by the way, I mean, there's so many people. We went to Montana. We drove 25,000 miles over, off and on, over the 3 years, from Montana to South Texas to California to Maine. And we filmed in Montana. We filmed Randy Weaver and Jack McClam to tell their story, their side of the story about the militarization of the police. And it's pretty shattering to listen to that whole story.
Right. And the project got bigger and bigger, right?
Yeah, it
was about a year and a half ago that we got together with you, and we brought a crew down there, about 40 folks and their families, and filmed the Appleseed segment of this, because the show is made up of interviews with all different folks, and everybody has everybody on there is putting in their own opinions or their own string of facts and opinions, and the same thing with Appleseed. And
the wonderful part about Appleseed was that you know, we cannot forget our history. And of course, the mechanical part of that history is what you're teaching with the Army qualification test. And Anita, by the way, went through, I believe, 3 Appleseeds here. Luckily, they're local enough that we could do it. And I was afraid she wouldn't get through. You know, it's the old thing I was saying about people roll their eyes. I've always tried to get Anita to go out and shoot with me, and there was always a reason why she didn't want to. But when she got out there, I didn't think she'd last the day. Or half a day, and then, well, Lydia, you pick it up. Tell him about what you experienced.
Well, it turned out that I was more competitive than I thought, and I got out there, and I was tired. But when I saw what the goal was, the first day you have fun, and you kind of learn to do different, you know, shoot from different positions and all these different things you learn, and loading and unloading, and then it speeds up, and it goes faster and faster. And by the next day, you're actually you know, trying to do your very best on the targets. And when I recognized that's what we were doing, I really got into it, and it was very fun, although I'm still not that good. I almost made the first level. I was pretty close.
Well, yeah, but you did
getting
a great
familiar.
Job. And then,
just getting familiar.
And then
with
you
the
guys both
course.
Came up, and you came and you shot here one day. Well, what about... about a month ago, you both came up and shot.
Yeah, pistols.
And you did a great
all
job.
Day of pistols. Yeah, and that helped me a lot too. And so I'm just a typical female that.
Let me tell you another example of I can say something to someone and they won't get it. Someone else says it and it works. When we went out to Scout's Ranch to play a little bit, I kind of tricked her because I said, "Oh, we'll just go out and hang out a little bit." But then we got there, and of course. Obviously, the game was to hit some targets, and he had her firing a Glock 19, I think, probably fired 300 rounds, 400 rounds, and then he said, "Oh, well, let's try some other stuff." So he gives her a 12 gauge, an AK. I think she's fired a Mauser. I can't remember what all, but it was a 357. I knew he ran off on that one, but and a 45. The point is, she did it, and she got past that block, and now she's running with the ball.
Right. Right, and it wasn't just your shooting skills that advanced. There was also a good bit of philosophy that that apparently you altered, and I think it's going to make you put you in a better position to to defend yourself and your loved ones. So that was great. Well, the movie is narrated by Charlie Daniels. And in my when I was doing a write-up for the show earlier today, I wrote in there that, you know, I always knew he was a great guy, great music, and that, you know, he was a man to ride the river with. Until the movie came out, though, I never really knew what a devoted patriot he was.
Well, the funny thing is we looked, for years we did national TV commercials out in L.A., and I knew from dealing with advertising agencies how much they will pay or clients will pay for celebrities to say this is wonderful, because if a celebrity says this is wonderful, they'll buy it. I knew the key to getting this thing, you know, head and shoulders a little bit above the average film was get a celebrity. But try to get a celebrity to come out on these issues, and it's virtually impossible. Because they're always looking over their shoulder. Well, somebody said, you ought to look at Charlie Daniels' website. It's charliedanielsband.com. And he has a soapbox that he writes for frequently. And I started watching what he was writing, and boy, he was on it. In fact, last week he came up with a tirade about Obamacare passing, and it made the news. So obviously that's great for us. And I knew that we could coattail the fact that if Charlie said, listen to this, and he wrote the most amazing original song for it, which is under the credits at the end, all about the New World Order. And, you know, it's just it's just made a huge difference. And I think eventually once this catches, it'll really, a lot of it will be because of him. Oh, let me digress one second because of the type of show yours is. Back to General Boykin. When he was in Grenada, he was in a helicopter, and they came upon a Cuban position on a hill, and they started taking fire, pitched caliber fire, and he was hit. He was hit in the arm, which nearly ripped his arm off, as you can imagine. And so they had no more aircraft on the carrier, which was close to them, except one helicopter, which was in maintenance and basically was deadline, was not supposed to fly. And so it just we went to Houston this weekend. He was speaking at a church there and told the story. But basically, he didn't know it at the time, but it was a friend of his. And when he found out it was to fly it, and when he found out that it was his. It was him out who was down. The friend just grabbed the helicopter and left. And so they went with that aircraft that was not supposed to be flown, and they picked him up and saved his life and saved his arm. I am afraid to even think what it'd be like to be hit with a 50 anywhere.
Yeah. I'm surprised that he has any part of his body left if he got hit with a 50. That used to always be one of my great fears, was that I was going to get hit with a 50 caliber round in a delicate area, and I used to have it was a completely irrational fear. But you know what? Every once in a while, I would catch myself, especially if you could hear rounds being fired, I would catch myself with my hand trying to protect the area, which of course, as you know, is ridiculous, because the 50 caliber, you know, it'll travel several miles. It'll go completely through an APC, as I found out very quickly. It'll go through one side of my APC and out the other. So my hand was not going to do any good. But I still always had that irrational fear. So him taking a round in the arm being left at all, is pretty amazing.
I think you said it was a glancing shot, but even anywhere within inches, your body seemed like it would just, I don't know. But where were we? You had asked something I got off on there.
Well, I had asked about, or I wanted to talk about Charlie Daniels doing the narration, about him being such a wonderful patriot, and then also the fact that he wrote
it's an original. It's not an original score because they have other music. It's just the theme song, which is 6 minutes at the end. It was funny how that happened because I, trying to find a celebrity that was right that would do it, it took forever to get in touch with his manager. Then I sent him the script in Tennessee and Nashville, and actually lived in Lebanon, and he got back to me a couple weeks later, and he said, you know, Charlie's had a stroke, and he's pretty much said he's not doing anything extra, but I'll give it to him. Because I know this kind of stuff's near and dear to his heart. So he did, and within a couple of days, Charlie called and said, I'm going to be in San Antonio next week. I want to meet you. I said, okay. And we went over there and had a long talk, and he and I, and he said, I'll do it. Be in Nashville in 10 days or whatever it was. And by the time we got there, he had written that song, and they recorded it. And it was pretty amazing. And we think we can ever get it to break into the country music world, there's a huge, huge audience that we can open up. And, of course, we feel the faith-based world. And then all those people out there, 300-plus million Americans that are confused about where we're going here. But we've had it in a theater, and it looks great on a big screen. And I've always shot 35-millimeter film, and this is the first time we've done video, so I was crossing my fingers, but it worked. And,
well, you know, the cinematography, I want to tell folks real quick when you mention this, that, and if you guys go to, I don't know if you can get to it from the BeholdAPaleHorse.tv, but Chuck has done some fantastic work over the last couple of decades, a great deal of cinematography and stuff in his commercials and stuff like that, really beautiful work. And you're switched over to video for this one, but the folks I've talked to that have seen it have just been amazed at the quality of the photography. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful.
I appreciate that. We started, it was for what we did, which is 3 hour-and-a-half films. It's not exactly a huge budget, and it makes it difficult when you have limited resources, but we were able to get it done, and I was especially proud of the Washington crossing the Delaware sequence.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. That the scene of Washington crossing the Delaware, and then all of the Alamo stuff is just—it's beautiful. It's just—it really surprised me because I wasn't expecting to see that level there. And I'm not saying that I was surprised because of you. I'm just saying I didn't know that you were going to. They were going to invest that amount of money and time in the project.
Well, what I wanted to do, I mean, obviously, well, you know, I can express my opinion, and my opinion is fully that we are losing our country, and there's countless reasons for it, but it's all part of a globalist agenda. And I wanted to end the film with a dramatic note, which, as a Texan, six generations of the Alamo kind of comes to heart. And we live very close to where they filmed the last Alamo, the Billy Bob Thornton version. And that set was still there. So one of our investors knew the people, and we got access. We went over there and shot a reenactment of an element of the Alamo, drawing a line in the sand. And I thought, what better possible way to get the point across to people? Because that's still, Texas or not, a universal concept to most Americans that, you know, drawing your line in the sand. And that's really the bottom line, because if we, the people, don't, you know, the big thing that I pondered for so long and tried to come up, it's easy to come up with problems. The solution is obviously much more difficult, but was, what is the solution? And the only thing I've been able to come up with, you know, is wear your knees out praying and get off the couch and do something. And drawing your line in the sand is part of the get off the couch thing. And everybody, this is what we can do because we know to do film, but everybody can do something. Doesn't matter if you're licking stamps and sending letters to people, everybody can do something. And if everybody collectively, and I hate that word in a communist sort of sense, but if everybody got off the couch and did something, and if making their neighbors aware, if nothing else, then we can turn this around. But I'll tell you this, if we don't do something, I think we're toast. And I think it's self-evident by all the things that have happened in the last 4 years, and this is not an issue of Obama, if we only got someone in the Republican Party, everything's fine. It's all the same. It's so much deeper than that. That's why it took us 3 years, and that's why there's 3 hour-and-a-half films, because every time you peel a layer of the onion, there's another dark issue under it, and it's just kind of overwhelming. But you just got to kind of keep it simple and realize that, you know, if we just keep our eye on the ball as far as the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, where we came from, who we are, and say, I ain't gonna let this happen in my country, as the general says, or as he says, we were all born for such a time as this, I think there's hope. But it's,
well,
this time,
the guy that you have playing General Washington in the show, he is excellent. You know, he's been doing it for a number of years, and he is very, very knowledgeable on Washington, and he's been doing bringing the information he has to the folks by way of his Washington persona for quite a while. He does an absolutely fantastic job of it, and he does the same thing in the movie. He does an absolutely fantastic job in the movie of lending Washington's words to the movie, and at the same time lending or portraying the Washington, not the Washington that that necessarily that we all want to see crossing the Delaware, chopping down the cherry tree, but the Washington that's, I believe, is historically accurate as possible.
Well, we, as a director, we were horrified as to what we'd gotten ourselves into, because we were to leave to go and film the boat scene crossing the Delaware at Valley Forge simultaneous to some other people that were speaking there that we wanted to get in the film. And we left with only half to $60,000 we needed to go do that part of the film, that sequence, and not just the boat, but the speaker and everything. And I said, well, you know what, I'm leaving anyway, let's go. We got an RV, we got halfway up there, and the money appeared. But we were still that far away before we had a Washington, and we were beginning to lose it. And one night, Anita, just for entertainment, brought a DVD home to watch. Anita, tell them the story, and it turned out.
Well, I just found The Revolution, which was a 9-part series, and we're always interested in anything historical, and that's probably everyone that listens to your show has seen that one, but if you haven't, I would recommend The Revolution. Anyway, George Washington in there is our Mark Collins, and he's fantastic in that series also, although he has no speaking parts because it's mostly a voice over or a narrative with, you know, just the action behind them. But that's how we found him, and now he's turned into a wonderful friend. He lives fairly close to where we are, 2-3 hours away from us, and he's a Baptist preacher, and he says the fact that he's a wonderful actor and a father of, I think, 5 or 6 kids that were all homeschooled, wonderful family, just incredible human being. So we've made a lot of friends along the way, too.
Right. He lives in Yorktown, Texas.
Right. And now I spoke to him, a year or two ago about doing something with the Appleseed Project. And that's still a possibility. I'd love to have him do something with us. I just haven't found the right thing yet, the right way to do it.
Well,
he's a wonderful speaker. He was just at the Texas Republican Convention and spoke in front of 17,000 people there, no problem at all. He delivered 2 prayers and 2 speeches, and he showed the trailer for Behold a Pale Horse, America's Last Chance, and he actually did it in a crafty way.
Special thing that we cut for him, because I knew he would just have a short time he was asked to speak. He's a Baptist preacher as well, and he saw it as a great opportunity, and he said, cut a special little thing that you think would be the best put forward on the film. And so I recut a little trailer, which started with the scene of Charlie Daniels saying, I forget what he said, something like, there's traitors among us, we need to have a hanging. And then he starts laughing, so it's a joke. But the next scene, it says revolution, a slate comes on, a period thing I put together, it says revolution in Texas. And then it unfolds the Alamo reenactment where Travis draws the line in the sand, and then Charlie's song. Well, they played that, believe it or not, in front of 17,000 people with our website on the end of it, on six feature film size screens, movie screens, simultaneously. And it was the best advertising you could ever have. But he's just, you know, that kind of guy. And to give you a little more about him, I think when Washington was 50, an artist did a life mask, a plaster life mask of his face to use, you know, later to flesh out and make use for a painting he was doing. And that still is around. And someone compared, Mark on his website has what he calls a split face. He shows his face, because he didn't just happen into this. He is an amazing double for Washington. And he's got this split face of the real Washington life mask and the other side of his face. And it's eerie, because I defy you to almost mix it up and say which one is the Washington, which one's him. So he's just really into it. He looks at that as his calling to you know, from the pulpit, which you don't hear that much these days, talk about political issues and to illustrate the real founding fathers. And he does an amazing job of it. And I think you should use him, and I think he would do it.
Well, you know, when we were talking about this a while back, and the narrator hadn't been worked out yet, and you and I were talking about the different folks, and one of the names you brought up was Willie Nelson, and I was thinking, I remember telling you, please no. I love Willie, but it just would not have had the same, wouldn't have had the same impact. You know what I mean?
I think that Charlie has that sort of Norman Rockwell Americana aura about him that appeals maybe more widely. Willie has that same aura, but it's in a different way. But I can tell you that Charlie is a dedicated and faithful Christian. When we were filming in this little log cabin in Tennessee, it was beginning to snow. It was in November, and it was really cold. And we took a break, and in fact, the only heat we had was in the fireplace, the log cabin. But we came out, he took a break, and there were about seven or eight guys running around in orange jumpsuits cleaning up trash on this little park where we were filming. And he yelled, booming across the area around the cabin, he said, come here, boys, we're going to pray. And they all shuffled over there, and he made them hold hands, and he started praying. And the sheriff that was with him came up, and he was not quite sure how to handle it. But anyway, he walks the walk, and he is, I think, a great patriot. And if nothing else, because of his position, the fact that he calls it like it is. And these days, you see, the people, we've danced around the issues. The issues are, I believe, we're losing our country to a globalist agenda. And you can call it fascism, socialism, communism, whatever, international communism, which is probably the closest concept. But all that is controlled by a world elite. Most of your people are going to know this. I'm preaching the choir here. And the UN has an integral part of it. And as you well know, the UN has the Small Arms Treaty, which general breaks down in detail, and the Law of the Sea Treaty, which will give all 70% of the Earth's control to the UN. And so really, the UN is the enforcing arm of the global elite, which are pushing a communist, feudal, high-tech feudal system for the world. And Agenda 21 through the UN is the heart of it. And we cover that in detail, and will more in part two. But Agenda 21, basically, for those who don't know, calls for no private property, all water and food controlled by the UN, no sovereign nations and a reduction of world population by 85% or 90%. And they're not kidding. And we have the documents, and they're implementing it, have been for 20 years. And it is really at the county level in every county in this country. And they don't have an Agenda 21 sign on the door at the county. It all comes through grants from the government, because when Bush 1 went to the real conference, I think it was 94, and when they really cranked it off, he came back and infused all of these principles of Agenda 21 into the federal government. And so there are grants, and it's just part of an agenda. And
Right. And, tell you, I'm not one of those folks that has I was looking for my tinfoil hat the other day. I couldn't find it. But I'm not one of those folks that that is really a believer in big conspiracies or anything like that. There probably are some, but I've never seen, in my mind, I've never seen humans organize enough to have a huge successful conspiracy. But nonetheless, there are literally thousands of groups that are working, and whether they're connected or not, it doesn't matter, because they're all working toward close to the same goal, which is to strip not just Americans, but all nations of their sovereignty. You know, we have a young lady that Marietta Abels, that has been a guest on the show before, and she goes from country to country speaking about this very same thing. And, you know, the United States is not the only ones, we're not the only ones that's worried about it. There are many other countries that are now, that are waking up to this and saying, hey, wait a minute, this is a worldwide problem. And if we don't get a grip on it right now, we're going to lose our sovereignty.
It's fully a global issue. And in the old days, if you wanted to get away from tyranny, you went to America. Well, guess what? The only thing really, in reality, standing between global government is a sovereign American republic as designed. And as you know, they've been chipping away at the underpinnings of that for several decades, and they're closer and closer. And the purpose of it is world government. And Agenda 21 is the shoehorn, which is getting us there. And for instance, anyone that wants to look at Michael Shaw does a wonderful job in the film explaining it. But look at freedomadvocates.org. That's Michael Shaw's site, and he is in California. He's an attorney, but he has been on this full time now for several years. There are many other people like him, but he just did an amazing opportunity, or job with it. But it has absolutely nothing to do with conspiracy, except to the people, us, we the people. We're the ones that are being conspired against. The reality of Agenda 21 is concrete. And that's the thing, as Jim Marr said in the film, everything you see and hear is controlled by five multinational corporations who are part of this agenda. And those people control not only television, but radio, magazines, everything. It's a Joseph Goebbels heaven in terms of propaganda, because there's an absolute agenda. And
we know that this is true. And I'll tell you another thing. If you want to, you can get a better perspective on this if you have cable, or if you have the ability to start seeking out news programs from other countries, okay? And start watching news programs from other countries. Now, I'm not going to tell you that they are all correct either, but in the United States, we only get American news stations, and like you said, those are all mainly controlled by corporations who pretty much tell the news organizations a lot of what they can and can't say. And American media, it is no longer what it was even just 50 years ago. It's now a business, and a business is designed to make money. And the way you make money is you have advertising. So you got to have a lot of stuff that's generating a lot of fuss so that you get a lot of viewers, so that your advertising can be more expensive. And that's what they do here. Now, if you can look at a lot of the other different countries and look at their news programs, and it gives you a little bit more of an insight to what's going on around the world and the things that the rest of the world sees as important. And I want to tell folks, too, that the Appleseed Project, of course, isn't we're not endorsing any of the folks in the movie or any of their opinions. But I'll tell you this, that you shouldn't be swallowing whole anything you hear or see either. You can take a look at the movie, and just because you're watching what somebody says, it doesn't mean you have to believe them or agree with them. The smartest thing to do is if they say something and you think it's of interest to you, then you find out, you research it. You find out what it is. If somebody's talking about Agenda 21, you don't have to believe what they say. Agenda 21 is actually set down in stone. It's all written out.
We actually have it on our website. You can download it, and it's 400 pages. You have to wade through it and pick it out amongst
I believe a good part of that was done on purpose. They make it so big that you've got to wade through it to find the fish hooks and the punji steaks and stuff that are in there. And a lot of the stuff I've read that they've been pretty open about, one of the things is that you mentioned was the reduction in world population. The folks who are some of the main movers and stuff in this have stated quite openly and very publicly that they want to reduce the population of the world by 5 billion people. Now, I'm not sure how you do that, but that's their goal, is to reduce the world population by 5 billion people. So you can draw your own conclusions on how that's going to get done, but that's one of the things that that they openly speak about. So when you're watching this movie, and I urge you to watch it, because there's a ton of facts in there. This isn't people just spouting off anecdotal stories or their possible theories on stuff. This is a huge amount of facts in all of this. You watch the film, you take the parts that you want to learn more about, and you research it, just like anything else you do in your life. You research it, you find out for yourself.
Charlie says a couple times in the film, you don't have to believe me, look it up for yourself. And our challenge is, we've got on the website, we've got the bio page, which has a blurb on all the 38 people we found, and their link to their website. And there's a million ways you can research any of this, but we thought that was just a good place to start for people who really don't know anything. And there's so many people like that out there, because the one thing, the huge mistake strategically that I believe they have made is Americans still believe, whether they understand these issues or not. And the thing you got to remember is, whether someone has heard of it or not, whether they believe it or not, whether they understand it or not, does not change the reality. The reality is, it's out there. But the point is,
right, and I'll also say that while Appleseed doesn't, we don't have any politics. We don't have any kind of endorsement of any politicians or politics one way or the other. We're open to everybody. And as far as I know, the folks in your film, I believe that there were some, I don't believe every single person that you spoke to was a conservative either, were they?
Well, it sounds like he's gone. No, there's all different philosophies politically, but everyone in it is very strong about their particular subject.
Right.
So there are a lot of different subjects covered.
Right. Yeah. Tell I'm sure that Chuck's calling back in. As soon as he calls back in, I'll bring him back on the line. And you're right. Every single person you guys had on there, there was nobody that that's interviewed in the film, that speaks on the film, that is ambiguous or wishy-washy. Each person that you guys have interviewed are extremely sharp and outspoken individuals. They know the subject that they're speaking on. They speak about it from the heart, and they're very engaging. And each of the pieces, I keep wanting to mention that the film isn't just informative. It's also very beautiful to look at. I mean, the one of the things that Chuck has is a wonderful eye for the shot. And
he does. He may drive people crazy, making them, you know, just do just the right, sit in just the right light and everything, but the final product looks pretty nice. So the best way for people to look at it is to look at the trailer. I mean, to get an idea of what we're talking about is go to the website, which is www.beholdapalehorse.tv, and then on the homepage is a trailer and more information. So you could see the different subjects. But one of the subjects is the Constitution, and most people, that's dear to their heart. There's information about the Constitution, states' rights. We interviewed Senator Key, Charles Key, and he talks about states' rights.
Right.
So that was an interesting segment.
Each one of the people that you interviewed, if you go to the website, beholdapalehorse.tv, you can click on the interviews, and that will give you a page that has all of the folks that are interviewed, and it will give you a little bit of a bio about each one. And each one of those folks, as I said, each one of these folks are very well-spoken folks. Stuart Rhodes is on there, and for you guys in the Appleseed Project who don't know, Stuart Rhodes was a member of Appleseed. Before he was an Oath Keeper, he was a member of Appleseed, and he wrote one of the first pieces for Appleseed that we actually used as promo material. That was the SWAT magazine article that he wrote, and all of these folks are very knowledgeable in their the fields that they're speaking about. And like I said, and I got Chuck, you're back on the air now, so welcome back. And
sorry,
I was telling everybody that that one of the things I have to keep mentioning is that not only are all the folks well-versed in their fields and well-spoken on them, but you're just a master of the shot, and each of these interviews are not only pleasing to listen to, but they're very beautiful to watch.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm not sure where I dropped that, but I do want to add something that's really important. Edmund Vieira says at one point when he's in the Constitution section, he's a constitutional authority, and he won 5 cases at the Supreme Court. He said, it's 11:30 at night in this darkness which is upon us, but a lot can be accomplished in 30 minutes, historically speaking. And it's so apropos because I think so many of us, I'm not sure where I dropped out, but think we still live in America, and it's being eroded, you know, by the moment. And that's, I think, is the mistake the New World Order has made, because we're still the stock of the people that began, where this country began. And once people really understand what's happening, I wouldn't want to get in their way. And, let me say one other thing quick. I don't know if we're running out of time, but we are adding a page in about a week on the website. This is a unique idea to offer to people. I believe the only way to fix this is the grassroots up. The other direction is kind of, you know, it ain't there. But our concept that's unique is we will have in about a week an explanation on one of the pages on what we're calling the our advertising theme for this is a quote from Charlie from the film where he says, "Let's ride, boy, the 1,000 Paul Revere's." And so we're taking that as our advertising theme, and we put it on this one page on the website, which is called the Cinema Package or the Cinema Page, and we're going to be able to tutor people in small town America. And of course, you're in the city, that's fine too if you can do it. But in small town America, to go to their local theater and negotiate a deal of $250 to $400 to rent a theater, for a showing. We provide a Blu-ray, a film poster, and we will sell DVDs wholesale to people that are doing this, because you can actually make a couple thousand dollars if you fill up a theater between DVDs and the tickets. And the point is, make a local event out of it. Get somebody who's the local patriot expert, or if you have somebody you can bring in, like Sheriff Mack, anybody, to speak afterwards, and just make it into an event. And we've shown it in a theater, or two theaters, actually. It looks great. And there's just something about going in a theater and sitting down with a bunch of people that's very different than watching it on TV. And I think if that takes off, you could really get it out in a lot of places that would never see it on the big screen.
Right. Well, let's talk about that for a second. There have been several screenings already. There was a Fredericksburg screening, right?
Yeah.
At the Fredericksburg Film Festival. And then there was a recent one just recently in Austin, right?
No, it was in Llano, Texas, which is near Austin.
In Llano,
and we're gonna,
right.
We're going to have another one in Austin.
And there'll be several more. And I know that you copied me on the folks, the organization that wanted to show the film and have all the folks there to speak and I guess have a round table on it. Now, and aren't you getting ready to show the film at a really large setup?
Well, yeah, we've been invited. There's an organization called Liberty Avengers who's having a two-day event 3 or 4 days before the RNC in Republican National Convention in Tampa, which has nothing to do with the RNC. It's just an event in that town. And it's called Liberty Avengers, and the venue happens to have an IMAX theater, and they're going to kind of make it a centerpiece. We'll show it in an IMAX theater, not IMAX, but just normally, but through Blu-ray. And that could gain a lot of attention. You see, the problem is Anita and I can take this around the town here, town there, you know, for the rest of our lives, but through the Internet, if people, local people all over the country, were to notice what I'm talking about and show it in their own time, their own way, locally, obviously it gets out, 100 times more than if we do it, because for us to do it over and over is very laborious. For a lot of people to get on the bandwagon and do it in their own area, it'll get out. And we're not making money on that, except we've got investors to pay back and sell them the DVDs wholesale. But an organization like a Tea Party or whoever can make the seating. You charge $5, $6, $7 per seat, and you fill up a 200-seat theater. They make money there, and they'll pay for their effort, and they can make money on the DVDs, which are $19.95 retail. So, the big issue is to get it out there. I won't say I don't have some investors calling me saying, hurry up, but I mean, I've got to do that, but I've also got to, obviously the game is to get it out there. And we just happen to be in the right, it's a perfect storm because of the election coming up. This isn't going to change the election. Election's already figured out. It's just that people are stirred up and they're more willing to listen. That's the point. These issues are not going to go away no matter who's in.
Well, when you and I were talking about this, a couple of weeks ago, and then again today, I told you what I thought is that the folks are going to be speaking about a lot of stuff that maybe that some of the people who are going to watch the film haven't heard of before, and there a lot of it may be brand new to you, or you may not understand what they're talking about. But once again, I'm going to go back to what I said before, and that is the whole idea of this is to get the information out to folks. once the information is out, then you do with it. You are all grown men and women. You do with it what you think needs to be done. Nobody's going to tell you what to do or how you should do it or anything else. But once the information is out before you, then you take a look at it. You see what you think. If you think it's a bunch of hooey, then that's what it is. If you think it's something that needs to be looked at, then by gosh, start looking at it. Start figuring it out. Start figuring out what you need to do, because just like the current economic crisis that we're facing, and it is a crisis, folks, we are now, our debt now, the American debt is now now exceeding 100% of the GDP. 100% of the GDP. If every American gave every penny they had to the government, it would not pay it off. If every American gave every penny they had to the government, it would not pay it off. And this is not something that we're going to have to figure out because, oh, something's going to get bad and you know, down the road, 15 or 20 years. Something's going to get bad in 2 years. Really, really bad. And the time, there's no longer any time available for folks to sit around and say, you know what, man, you know, at some point in the future, we need to figure out, we need to do something. We need to start learning about what's going on in our nation so that we can do something about it. That time has already passed. That was a couple of years ago. We're already at the point that we need each and every American to start doing something right now in order to try and head this off. I don't know if we're going to make it or not. But we're certainly not going to make it if folks don't make the effort to find out what's going on in the nation around them. What is going on? And most of this is not hidden stuff. This is the stuff that the folks that Chuck and Anita interviewed for the film, this isn't secret stuff that only they could find out. This is all stuff that's being done right in front of you, of each and every person's faces now. They have such contempt and well-deserved contempt for the American people, but they're not hiding anything. They're doing it right in front of your faces because they know you're not going to do anything. They know you're not even going to try and find out what they're doing, and they're going to do it right in front of you, and they're going to walk over it. They're going to walk straight up to you. They're going to put their hand in your pocket, and they're going to take every single thing that you own. And they're going to do it right in front of you because nobody's going to be paying attention. Nobody's paying attention anymore to what's going on around them.
Here's the thing that again is so in your face, and yet people are in a super because I get up in the morning, I look out the horse and the cattle, and I think, well, I don't even want to know all this. I just don't want to know, and I do know, but people that don't know, it's easy to understand why they don't want to know. But you know, when you talk about 30,000 drones, you know, tactical drones, military drones in the skies over America. And Charlie says this in a couple of places. Why does America need that? I'm sorry. The terrorists are not here. If we're concerned, why do we have the TSA if we absolutely have a porous border? Why is it that the National Defense Authorization Act authorizes the military for the first time since Reconstruction dissolves posse comitatus? Why is it that all of a sudden, since January, February, whenever he signed it, it's okay to arrest American citizens on American soil without due process and hold them indefinitely? You go tell people
right.
That average person on the street that, and they'll keel over because they think you're a total Martian. And it's reality. It's the law. Why
right.
are all these?
And just like you said, you brought up a very important point, Chuck, and that is, Even folks like you and me, because I do the same thing. I look at it. I look at this tsunami of information, of bad information that I'm having to listen to and having to read and I'm trying to figure out what to do with it. I think, oh my gosh, I just want to close my eyes. I don't want to have to get involved in this because it's too much. But we can't. We can't. We got to. Somehow, you're going to have to pick some small piece of it, and you're going to have to bite into it and hold on to it, and you're going to have to help figure out how to defeat that one small piece that you're holding in order for us to safeguard and preserve the liberties and freedoms that we have by virtue of living in this nation at this time?
Well, basically, globally, like I said when we first began, there cannot be global government if there's a free American republic based on the founding principles. All of this collapse, the proposed North American Union combining Mexico and Canada, global one world currency, you know, the Law of the Sea Treaty where the UN basically controls the world, RFID chipping. Do you know that in the original form of the Obamacare, there was a provision for all Americans to have an embedded RFID chip with the excuse it would be comfortable for your medical records?
Right.
And that was taken out because it's so controversial. Now, I don't understand technically where it is, but it's sort of floating along the side of it in some provision. But, you know, I was raised in a small town in Texas, and when I was growing up, it was all about mom and apple pie and going to church and football games. And you know, like I said earlier, we lived in Norman Rockwell, America. Well, what place in Norman Rockwell, America is there for the military to arrest you in this country, for drones to spy on you, for RFID chips and roadblocks, the Viper teams that TSA is about to roll out, which would be arbitrary roadblocks all over the country so you can see your papers. I mean, why does America need that?
Right.
If you will indulge me, I want to read something real quick from Romans. It's Romans 12:2. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It's time for people to take notice, because we're in deep trouble, and I don't know if it can be turned around. And I talked to all these people and people they know and the general and all these people all the time, I'm an optimist, but there is a limit to where, you know, there's going to be a tipping point, and if we don't wake up, in fact, that's why most people think the New World Order is ramping up this concept, because they know that people are waking up, and if they wake up too quick, it'll spoil their plan, because they've been doing a fantastic job with incrementalism for decades, but they're ramping it up because we are waking up.
Well, let's talk about real quickly about the reason that you asked for Appleseed, or you allowed Appleseed to be included in this, and that is, you tell us why you had Appleseed in there.
Well, I think it is self-evident that the concept behind that, without saying it, and that is that, you know, we began this country with the revolution, and in the opening of the film, George Washington walks up. We filmed at Oak Alley Plantation, which looks very colonial. It's 19th century near New Orleans. He walks up and he says, "Our revolution becomes your revolution." And I'm not urging anyone to do anything. I'm just telling you what's wrong. I don't know what's going to happen, but the thing is, if your average Joe becomes a Minuteman when the time comes, there's a chance, and so you don't learn that by not going through the process of learning it. And I think y'all are doing an excellent job teaching people fundamentals, which for no other reason are right.
Right, and when you and I were talking about it, you said that there's a lot of people in the film that are going to be putting out information. They're going to be putting out things that there may not be a good or readily usable answer to, or to the problem, et cetera. And that one of the reasons that you included Appleseed was because the Appleseed Project is one of the possible solutions to the problems that we face, and that is getting people awake and aware off the couches, getting them involved first by getting them to the range and getting them to participate in the heritage of shooting, and then to listen to the history of our nation and understand, because one of the things we teach people at the Appleseeds is that each and every American has a non-delegatable responsibility to safeguard the freedoms and liberties that this nation provides them. Each and every person has a responsibility, and that's what we teach at Appleseed, and that's one of the things that's going to help us turn this around, and that's making sure that people are aware that you cannot depend on somebody else to solve this problem for you. You're going to have to bite off as big a piece as you can chew and make the attempt at fixing it yourself. You can't have your mom do it or your dad or your brother or your sister, and you certainly can't depend on your congressmen or senators to do it. You're going to have to take this bull by the horns yourself, and you're going to have to wrestle this problem to the ground and figure out a way to fix it. And that's what we're trying to do at Appleseeds, and I hope that's what comes across in the film, because we're in the Appleseed section of the film is not me talking about anything other than the Appleseed Project and what we do and how we do it. And of course, there's a quick 3-second shot of my daughters and Tommy Newton's daughters yelling, "We are the solution," because they are. The kids, everybody. You have a section of the movie that shows, goes slice by slice, different people in their daily lives, and the chorus from each one, the refrain from each one is that we are the solution. I am the solution. This is a solution, and that's what it is. We can't depend on anybody, any organization. We have to depend on ourselves, and we have to get enough of us awake and working on this problem to get it fixed.
Well, I think that it always comes full circle to that concept, which is we the people are the solution, and we the people, as you say in the film, are the government. But we're not the federal government. We are, we the people, the government. And that has gotten virtually 100% lost in the recent past. And, you know, I mean, when you hear stories like George Soros, a George Soros company owns the company in Spain, which is going to count 3/4 of the national election ballots, you have to, I mean, just that single thing would have to make you start asking questions. And Anita, what is, you know, we don't have TV, so we read a lot, and I'm the world's worst on tunnels. What is the book I'm reading right now?
Which one?
the Revolution. It's by Shara.
Oh, I don't know. You're putting me on the spot.
Something like drifting or moving towards the revolution or something. That's not the name of it. But the point is, it leads up for about 6 or 7 years prior to 1776 to things that were going on both sides of the pond, and it just brings to mind today, people don't really realize, or most people don't really realize, we have taken the insult of tyranny 1,000 times worse than the people of the colonies at that time. And look what they did. In the film, someone asked Washington, Vieira makes the statement, what would the founding fathers have done? And he looks right at the camera, kind of surprised, and he says, well, what did they do when they were here? And the point is, the answer is, it's just that, we, you know, at the rate it's going and in the direction it's going, we are not going to have a recognizable country in just a very short time. And
right.
It's based on a global agenda.
Well, if folks
I'm with Washington. Maybe this is real simplistic. And it was maybe at the time, because of the time. But when Washington said, avoid global entanglements, I'm sorry, I just feel like I really don't care what else goes on in the world. I don't care about globalism. It's not such a high-tech world that we can't take all our industry back and be the people we were, the amazing position we were in after World War II, except for the people in Washington. You know, if we are as strong as we could be and as good as we could be and revered around the world like we once were, instead of hated around the world like we are, just think of the good that could be accomplished. And how do we get that back? I think it's going to be, at some level, divine intervention or God helps those who help themselves. But, it always drives me crazy. And like I said, I'm a retired Army officer. So I have gone around 1,000 times like everybody else saying, God bless America. And that's good and it's well-meaning. But look at what America has done. We have 60,000, we have a tremendous number, I'm a little late and I haven't eaten, abortions in this country. We have just an amazing amount of infringements on what we're supposed to be about. We're no longer the good guy. And I think it's time people said, bless God, America, because if we will have a revival and return to God as part of this process, then I think we will not be under the judgment we are, because we are not a favored nation, in a favored nation status anymore, and to my mind. And again, that may sound like heresy, but, you know, I served my country, and I'm an old fool, and I'm just doing what I see, and all you have to do is look, because it's all out there.
Right. Well, now, okay, folks wanting to get a copy of the DVD, Behold the Pale Horse, how can they get a copy of this?
Just go to our website. It's Behold, www. I don't think you ever need to use that anymore, but anyway, beholdapalehorse.tv. And on the homepage, there's a picture of the DVD, and you can click on that. It goes to Amazon, where they are doing the fulfillment of it. And pretty soon, we're not sure when, because it takes them a long time to get it worked out, but it'll be a streaming, pay-for-play streaming that you can download, but it's not actually on there yet, but you can get the DVD directly like that.
All right.
And secondly,
on our
website, there's a page where you can, and this all is through Charlie, it has nothing to do with us, but it's just on our page where you can, it's a pay-for-play, I think it's $1, I'm not sure, to listen to the original theme. And it's pretty moving, and but that's on our website as well, under the original music icon.
Okay. And I'm going to give away a copy of the DVD to the first caller that can tell me when the Declaration of Independence was signed. All right? We know that it was presented to the American people on July 4th, but when was it actually signed? All right? We'll take the first caller that can answer that question, and they'll get a copy of the DVD. All right. Well, Chuck and Anita, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to come on the show and talk to the folks about the film. And I just can tell you guys, I've seen it, and I think it's fantastic. I don't agree with everything that's said in the film, but that's not unusual. I don't agree with everybody on everything anyway. I've listen to what the folks have to say, and I use my best common sense And the things that I think that needed more looking into, I've already started looking into a lot of them. And the things that I think are hooey, I still think are hooey, but I'm going to check out, I'm going to research all of this stuff anyway. And I advise you to do the same. I'm never going to tell you that you should read something or listen to something or listen to what somebody says and swallow it hook, line, and sinker. It's the most dangerous thing that any American can do. You are dependent on to listen to folks, to listen to things, and then make your decision best or based on common sense and the facts that you yourself have figured out. Is there anything else you wanted to get out, Chuck and Anita?
No, we really appreciate you having us, and don't mean to seem radical if it does to some people, but you know, my challenge to anyone is, especially if you just the issues in the film, go to the bio page and look up the link for the people that are the various speakers. But you know, I'm not into sensationalism. I'm just trying to do what I can to help. And there is absolutely nothing at all in any one of the three parts which is not based on just historical reality. So our challenge is for people to look it up themselves, like Charlie says, and go from there. But thank you for having us, and we really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Anita. And
good night.
God bless and keep you guys. Be careful on the way back to your off-the-grid secret location.
We'll try not to run into any jackrabbits or deer or anything like that on our way back.
Well, listen, we'd like to have you guys come on again maybe in a few months. Come on again and talk to us about it again, because between now and then, you're going to go through a bunch more interesting situations, and you're going to find out some more stuff. And one last question. When do you see the last parts 2 and 3 being released?
We're about half edited, and as always, we're still raising a little money for the edit on that. But I'm hoping to have part 2 and part 3 out before the election. Not that the election is a turning point, but just as a time frame. And we're still going to film. We thought we were done, but so many things have happened since we quit shooting that we're going to film a couple, three more people. And for those of you who are aware of these issues, you look at this, you may say, oh, this is pablum. I've heard all this before. Well, really it's designed as a primer for those people who really just don't know. But for those of you who do know, part 2 and part 3 are going to be ramped up quite a bit. So
there'll be much more to disagree with, Scout.
There you go. And listen, I'm going to tell you guys one last thing too, the folks listening. If any of you guys has a big chunk of change in your pocket, I don't know how big it has to be, but I believe, and you can tell me if I'm right or not, but you guys are still still open to investors in the project, right?
Actually, we're at a point where we're going to sell some of our own shares, and we can take donations, but we have technically sold out, you know, the position. We could go and raise that, but it might take 3 or 4 months, the amount, to go back to everybody and start over. But I'm hoping to do it much sooner than that so we can get this thing out. But we are going to sell some of our positions so we can do that. But I don't want to waste a bunch of time here. I know you got more show, but I want to tell a story on Anita real quick. The other day, we don't have air conditioning, and we live on the second floor. So the other day, and the cattle come up every morning, we feed them. And the other day, we have a few new calves, and we have one black bull calf. And Anita looked out the window, and she said, "What have you been feeding that black calf?" I said, "What do you mean?" I got up and looked. She didn't have her glasses on. And there's a 2,000-pound bull out there that had jumped the fence because of the cows we've got. And she didn't have her glasses on. She thought that was the calf. And, I mean, the difference between a 6-month-old calf and a 2,000-pound bull is pretty different.
All right. Well, listen, thank you guys once again for taking the time out to come on. You guys will come on and maybe in a couple of months, and we'll talk again, okay?
Yeah, anytime. Thank you, Scott.
All right. Thank you very much. God bless you guys, and take care of you, and we'll see you down the road.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Right.
Good night.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, guys. It's already 8:55 here in the Central Time Zone. I burned up this the whole 2 hour block. So what I'm going to have to do is I'll have to run another show, and I'll listen to some of the advice from the chat room, and I'll have to run another show. I don't know if I should do it at the next scheduled date, at the next Thursday, when we'll probably have most of the listeners, or if I should run an IMC show tomorrow night. So I'll whatever you guys say in the chat, I'll take that into consideration here, and I'll try and figure out how to do that. So we're just about out of time. I got enough time to run through the callers that are holding online, and I'm going to take you in the order that you're holding on here. All right. First caller, area code 321. You're on the air, 321-578. Okay. Caller, area code 412-327. You're on the air.
Hi, Scout. It's me, Ed. I just wanted to answer your question, but I didn't want to win.
You what now?
You know, you had your question for the Pale Horse DVD.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
When was
the document signed? When was the document signed by everybody? Because we know that the original document, the original Declaration of Independence, was only signed by two people on the 4th of July. Charles Thompson, who was the secretary, and John Hancock signed it on that day. The manuscript that was there that day, it has actually disappeared. And we have the original Declaration of Independence. It was signed by all of the signers, and it's displayed in the National Archives in Washington. And all the rest of the copies of it, that's where it all came from. The original manuscript is nowhere to be found. But only two of those folks signed it on that day. When did the rest of the people sign it?
Well, the original approval for the document was actually on July 2nd, 1776.
Right.
Now you got me here. I don't know when everybody else signed it, so sorry.
You do what now?
I don't know when everybody else actually signed the document.
Okay.
I thought you were asking when it was approved, so I'm totally wrong.
Okay.
Enjoy.
All right. Okay. Let me go on to the next caller. Okay. Area code 512-659. You're on the air.
Okay. Hello. This is Rachel. So like the previous caller said, the Continental Congress approved the resolution on July 2nd, and that's when John Adams thought our big holiday was going to be. They approved the wording to the declaration on July 4th, but to the best of my knowledge, we don't know exactly what date it was finished being signed. I think on August 2nd is when the official copy was printed and ready, and they started signing it, but it still took a number of months to get everybody to the same place because of the war, because of travel, to be able to sign it.
Right. Well, that's what we'll take as an answer. The declaration. Now, I imagine just a second we're going to go off the air as far as everyone being able to hear. But I'll announce right now, Rachel got the copy that we're giving away because she was the first person to answer it correctly. The document was approved on the 2nd. It was brought to the rest of the folks and brought to the public on the 4th. On that day, Thompson and Hancock signed it. And then August 2nd was the date of the rest of the signers. Now, there is still a lot of controversy on when all of the the signatures finished up on it, but that's the date I was looking for. It was August 2nd. Okay, Rachel. I guess I'll be seeing you in a week or two, so I'll give it to you then. Let me get the rest of the callers on. Let's see, who else do we have here? I think that's it. Let me see. We got one more here. Area code 626-433. Okay. All right. Well, that's going to have to do it for tonight, folks. We're out of time. I'm sure that we've already passed off of the air here now. I want to thank everybody for listening. And congratulations, Rachel. And we will see you guys next Thursday, 7 p.m. Central for sure. And I imagine that's when I'll run the IMC show, because I want to make sure that I get it to as many folks as possible. All right. Thank you all. God bless and keep you. And we'll see you next Thursday, 7 p.m. Central.
lights in the skies broadcasting lies to billions of people. Cameras on the streets tracking who we meet. You call this liberty?